This podcast of NPR's On Point with Tom Ashbrook is a production of WBUR Boston.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Robert Greenberg may hold the future of advertising and marketing in his hands, but he didn't start out as an ad man. Greenberg started out in media technology, making Superman's movie credits rush at the audience, making Alien a high-tech dreadfest. Now, Robert Greenberg is at the front lines of the movement away from 30-second ad blasts and catchy jingles and into the up-close and personal high-tech future of advertising. From your web connection to your cell phone to your iPod to your personal space, a marketing movement away from mass media and into your personal life. Up next on Point, going way beyond the 30-second spot with Robert Greenberg. We'll be joined by Robert Greenberg in just a minute, but first, joining me from New York is Suzanne Ranitza. She covers advertising for The Wall Street Journal. Suzanne, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Talk to us about the big trends here. It's been a tough few years recently for Madison Avenue and advertising. Why?
Absolutely. I think the rate of change is remarkable what's going on. I'm just going to give you two statistics that basically symbolize what's really going on. In 2005, you've got network TV advertising was basically flat, and for 2005, internet advertising is up 30% to about $12.5 billion. Right there, that is a big, huge shift in terms of advertising spending, and that is having major ramifications on Madison Avenue these days.
How's Madison Avenue responding? What are advertising telling their ad agencies? What are they saying to the folks there?
The one great thing that they've learned is by going to the web, they have one thing that they've always been clamoring for. For decades, they've always wondered, does their advertising work? How do you measure? And that's why you're seeing so many dollars go into the internet, because there's actually a very big way to correlate what you spend and how it works in advertising. That significant step is forcing the TV networks and the agencies to figure out a new way to even do traditional advertising. You're seeing more demand for measurable results in terms of what's going on with their advertising. And every agency is under the gun from marketers across the board to provide those statistics, even if the traditional stuff. Because let's be sure, traditional advertising is not going away. But yes, it is waning, and there is going to be big change on this stuff.
So do you have major advertisers sort of putting their heels in and saying, no, I don't want to do 30-second spots, I don't want to do TV ads anymore, or I want something else, or what?
No one's saying that they're not going to do traditional TV advertising, but what they are saying is they're probably going to take some of their advertising budgets and dilute it and put it into non-traditional ways. You know, everybody's testing putting ads on cell phone. Chrysler, major ad spender, one of the top tens. They put a major emphasis on putting ads on their cell phone this year. That has a big impact on Madison Avenue because those folks have to be able to know the technology well enough to figure out what the new advertising models are, and there's the impasse. Madison Avenue all of a sudden has turned around and realized technology has increased tenfold in the last 2 years alone, that they have to now scramble to kind of keep up with where they're going and what new things they have to offer.
Does this mean down the road, I mean, years ago, everybody knew Winston tastes good like a cigarette should, and we know all the other jingles that were out there. Does it mean America's going to be less connected by a web of mass media advertising?
I think that is true, but I think there's nothing that's going to beat a great idea. The fact of the matter is, you know, you're going to still have the Doubleman twins, but they're going to have to live in a different kind of world. They're going to have to learn how to make an ad that lives on TV, that can live on the web, that can live, you know, on the cell phone. It can live in different sort of mediums, and it can actually work. So the idea of creating a campaign just for TV and spending 6 months jockeying and coming up with great ideas is sort of out the window at this point. What needs to happen is there's no longer this long-term effect of, you know, we have a new product coming out, here's the brief, go create an ad, take 6 months, fly around the world. We need to, advertising agencies are under the gun to get those messages out there quicker and to find new ways to do that. And one way to do that really quickly is the internet, because you have the instantaneous connection with people, and it's much faster. You know, having Bob Greenberg in, he has a company right there that basically can produce ads really quickly, and you're going to see internet advertising agencies doing regular traditional TV advertising, one, because they can do it cheaper, and two, because they can do it quicker.
So you see Bob Greenberg right in the middle of this shift. How do you see him?
Oh, absolutely. He's a rising star on Madison Avenue. He's got major marketers that he's working for. And everybody, you know, if you could always poo-poo it and say he's just an interactive ad firm, but that's the wave of the future. And I think Madison Avenue is awakening to that future very quickly.
Suzanne Vernitza with The Wall Street Journal. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Joining us now from New York is Robert Greenberg. He's chairman, CEO, and chief creative officer at RGA. In May, he will receive a Clio Award for Lifetime Achievement, the advertising world's Oscar. Since the late 1970s, he's pioneered visual effects in movies and ads, like the Coca-Cola campaign in which Paula Abdul danced with Groucho Marx in vintage footage. The New York Times calls him Madison Avenue's 30-second spot remover. Robert Greenberg, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
It's wonderful to have you. So you have quite a visual impression you make yourself. The Times says the visage of Benjamin Franklin with those eyeglasses and wonderful hair behind, the Renaissance interests of Da Vinci in the fashion sense of a well-turned-out ninja. So you've got your branding established there. But is branding what it's about anymore? Are we moving beyond branding?
I think we're moving beyond branding into a new area in marketing. And, you know, I think advertising's a subset of it. I think there's a whole new horizon with a new relationship with the customer that's yet to be fully developed.
How do you describe where we've come from and where we're going? I mean, the advertising marketing culture is so ubiquitous in this country. It's a fairly significant portion of the culture itself. So are we now exiting that sort of common ocean that we're all swimming around and heading into individual ponds? Or how would you describe the path?
Well, I think that the audience has changed so dramatically. I think young kids, sometimes referred to as millennials, the 18 to 24, 26-year-olds, are changing dramatically because they have access to multiple devices that they've grown up with. I think originally, or not too long ago, there was what some people were calling the joystick nation, which was really growing up with games. Mm. And now we're into a new area where the young people are growing up with all these computers as a natural part of just their being.
And what does that matter when it comes to marketing, when it comes to advertisers wanting to reach them? What does it matter if they've grown up this way?
Well, because they have so many ways to shut off advertising if they want to. It's an on-demand world and an inbound world now where people choose to get involved with a brand rather than having television commercials, as an example, thrown into the ether and having them somehow find you. I think there's too many choices that the younger audiences have to avoid advertising.
So that means that they can avoid advertising, but you're actually putting forward the idea that they will embrace a new kind of advertising. What would that look like?
Well, I think that I think we're moving from something that's a 30-second spot more into a metaphor that might be 2 minutes by 120 minutes wide. And that on the 2 minute side, it might be a 6 minute linear piece, short subject film, documentaries, all sorts of, like on one of our Nike sites, Nike Gridirons, it might be short films around training. But it's things that people are particularly interested in, and they go to a website or to digital signage or get involved with their cell phone around subjects that they're interested in. And there can be branding, but it's very experiential. The 120-minute wide piece is all the linkable content that's connected through the web, as an example.
You famously had the Nike ad in Times Square, the great big digital billboard with the Nike shoe on it. Passersby could dial up on their cell phones and manipulate the coloring and structure of that shoe from the sidewalk, I guess, there in Times Square. Did people respond to that?
Yes, I think that falls into the category of experiential. I think that somebody gets, involved with a huge 23-story sign in Times Square by dialing into an 800 number and getting positioned in a queue and then eventually being there right in Times Square, changing the color of a big shoe. It SMSs back the information in what's called a wallpaper to your cell phone, and then you can go off and buy it. And it's just a really great way to get somebody involved with the brand.
You say that ad agencies aren't in the business of ads anymore. What do you mean by that?
I think they're in the business of communications and marketing to in a multi-channel world, of which ads typically mean 30-second spots, and print ads are just part of it. I think it's both an inbound, on-demand relationship with branding, as well as an outbound relationship, which is really what existed before. So we also map against a couple other things, things that are perceptual or trying to change a person's perception about a brand, and things that are behavioral, which is more what we do in the interactive space, where we can actually understand much more about an individual and where they're going, what they like, what they're interested in.
Let's take a little trip down memory lane here. Just here's from 1960, a clip of an ad for Coke, the mass marketing way.
Be really refreshed. Work and play at your best. Enjoy the refreshing air. Pause for a Coke. Ice cold. Coca-Cola. Pause for a Coke.
Coca-Cola in 1960. Now let's fast forward to one of Bob Greenberg's projects. He handles a Nike account. If you go to the Nike website, you get options right away. Left-hand side, shop with your personal stylist. Right-hand side, work out with your personal trainer. And in fact, we get right into teaching you how to do really hip rock star hip hop moves. It's to drive women to the Nike website. It's a place where women can learn the latest hip hop or salsa moves, or guys too, I guess, if you like. You can watch a dance video, then learn the moves step by step. Here's the new kind of engagement. Let's listen here to a clip of the instructions you'll find at Nike.com.
Hey everyone, this is Jamie King, creator of the Nike Rockstar Workout Hip Hop. This workout is all about iconic hip-hop moves inspired by the hottest music videos. And this is your chance to step into the music video. We've got this great new track from our featured artist, Rihanna, and we'll break down each move so that you can add your own personal flavor. All right, let's break down Rihanna's moves. Ready? Here we go. Series one. Five, six, seven, eight.
Five, six, seven, eight, and we're right there in it with Rihanna. Bob Greenberg, what's going on here? You're offering dancing lessons online. Is that advertising?
I think it is, yeah, because the thing that we're trying to achieve is to get consumers to really swim with the brand, as we call it, be really deeply involved. And one thing about women is that they want to figure out ways to improve themselves. One way would be by exercising. And we came up with an insight that there's something around the construct of a rock video, making it an interactive rock video, being able to shop the video and have somebody like a personality like Jamie King, who really is the choreographer to many stars like Madonna. And that way, you're not just getting involved with the brand and perhaps gaining weight while you're doing it. Instead, you're actually doing something productive. And by the way, you can also buy the shoes and buy the outfits that Rihanna and her other dancers are wearing.
And they look pretty great, and you cannot miss them in the ad, even as you're getting the dance lesson. Are you also doing this more directly in relationship to the project? I mean, does advertising become product education? Is there a difference?
I think product education, I think actually breaks down into two areas. One is things that you can do online and using the new tools that I was mentioning earlier, the four screens as an example. You can get involved with both information that can be very deep about your financial life, as an example. Mm-hmm. Or you could get into something that's very experiential, like what you just mentioned around dance inside of Nike Women.
Do you think this is going to pull the sting? I mean, the downside of mass marketing was that we were always being whacked by it, and the frequency has just grown and grown and grown. Whether or not you had any interest in the product, does it pull the sting of that in the future? Are people going to be less assaulted by advertising and more welcoming because it's pinpointed to what they're actually interested in? Or is that too much to hope for?
I'm hopeful that that'll be the case because, again, it's on demand. You're choosing to interact with advertising, marketing, and messaging if you want to, and you don't have to if you don't.
Let's take a call. Dan's calling from Danvers, Massachusetts. Hi, Dan. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I do agree with the speaker's point to a certain extent, but my point is that I also, myself, tend to find it irritating, these invasions into my personal technology space, if you will. And, you know, maybe I'm a little curmudgeonly or a Luddite, but a lot of times I see right through this attempt at relationship building or personalization as nothing more than just another gimmick. And sometimes I even react negatively that it's like an anti-branding effect, that I'm going to avoid something on purpose because they irritated me by invading my cell phone, for example.
Well, let me ask you. I mean, when it comes to that little panel on the back of the airline seat in front of me, I'm right with you. Nothing could be more irritating than that ad shoved in your face. On the other hand, if it's on your laptop screen, isn't it usually your option whether you see it or not, Dan?
Well, true, except that many times I have to make a decision to firewall or not firewall some of that stuff, so my first interaction with it is often irritating rather than friendly.
Yep, we got it. Robert Greenberg, what do you say to Dan? He sees gimmicks, not education, and he sees a kind of a, you know, an invasion rather than what you describe as on demand.
I think that you have to look at it a little bit historically. I think that interactive advertising has probably been around for 11 years total compared to something that's been around since the, you know, mid-50s in terms of traditional advertising. Mm-hmm. So I think often they're getting it wrong. They are creating things that are really annoying advertisers. But I think the more that one learns about, you know, customer behavior, I think they can create things that are really meaningful.
Not gimmicks, you think they'll be welcome?
I think so.
Dan, are you open to the idea? Are you? Can you picture marketers as your friend one day? Sounds like we lost Dan there. Let me take another call from Columbus, Ohio. Michael's on the line. Hi, Michael. You're on the air.
Oh, hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Good to have you.
I was just listening to your show. I'm particularly interested in this topic because I work in the advertising industry here in Columbus.
Yeah.
And it seems like I've heard this kind of talk battered around for the past few years, kind of like designer water cooler talk about how great it's going to be in the future when, you know, these new technologies enable us to do these great things.
Mm-hmm.
But at least in our area, it's so client-driven. Even if I were to propose these kind of things to our clients, they don't see it. They're, you know, we can tell them all about it, but they're all, just give me a TV ad, just give me a magazine advertisement. That's really what I want.
So you're in Columbus, Ohio. You look around and the reality looks like pretty much more of the same to you.
I really don't see it changing. Until the clients really see it, from the design side, I just don't see us really having a need to change it.
Bob Greenberg, ad man to ad man, what do you say to Michael?
Hi, Michael. I hear what you're saying. I think that there's nothing short of a revolution going on in terms of advertising and marketing today. I think there's also a data revolution and a revolution in terms of, you know, all the devices that people have that allow them to interact with brands. But I think that not only do the advertising agencies have to transform into a new model in order to be more meaningful to customer engagement, but I think that clients have to do the same. So it's not something that's going to happen overnight. But I can tell you with our clients, they're coming up the learning curve much faster than the agencies, and they're demanding of their agencies that they change the way that they're changing the spend. So the dollars are going, as was mentioned earlier, into this area more so than traditional advertising in terms of growth.
Is it a national dynamic? Is it big advertisers like Nike or Verizon or you name it? Or how do you see it playing out locally, where Michael is eventually, Bob Greenberg?
I think that it's going to affect not just things that are local, but also things that are global. And I think, you know, there's the term, which I'm not sure that it's a good term, glocal, which is sort of the combination of global and local. I think ultimately a lot of this, the new advertising is also around communities and about implementation of ideas throughout the world. When you publish something to the web, it's automatically global.
Michael, have you had a single client ask for interactive advertising yet?
No. Ours are, again, even the web-based advertising that we are asked to do is pretty traditional and pretty straightforward. And again, I just don't know. I would love to see what Mr. Greenberg is talking about actually come to fruition. I think it'd be a very exciting time for our industry. But again, I just think on the client side and the end user, maybe not quite ready from where we sit.
May depend where you click in, Michael. Thanks for your call. I do see John Stratton here, Chief Marketing Officer for Verizon, saying, you know, agencies are failing to grapple with the realities of alternative media. Let's take another call. Eric's calling from Boston. Hi, Eric. You're on the air.
Hi. How's it going?
Well, good. What do you think?
Well, let me just start out by saying that I really appreciate the art that goes in and the craft that goes into some advertising.
And are you talking about 30-second spots, or are you talking about interactive Nike dance lessons? What?
The whole culture and history of advertising. And I appreciate how much it's really become and added to, you know, whether for better or for worse, the culture of the American, you know, person. But I'm wondering what the limit of interactive advertising is going to be. Novels by Philip K. Dick and William Gibson come to mind in their portrayal of a future that is absolutely overrun with advertising, and that to a point where it has swallowed up lots of personal and local culture. And I'm just wondering where that future or what Mr. Greenberg thinks of the limit.
If you look
interactive advertising.
Right. If you look way out there, Eric, thanks for the call. Bob Greenberg, how about it? The dystopic vision of this future. We saw it in the Minority Report, the movie, where everything is reading a particular individual as they move through an urban space and ads are all calling out to them almost by name. Is there a Philip K. Dick dystopic nightmare vision of this waiting for us, or is it all upside?
No, I don't think it's all upside, and I don't think to the person who called in that all advertising is necessarily good or, for that matter, creatively driven. I think there is an art and craft to great messaging that goes back historically to the very beginning of print and television commercial advertising. I think the best of it winds up, at least through the AICP, the Association of Independent Commercial Producers, in the permanent archive of the Museum of Modern Art, and it travels throughout the world. I think there's also just, you know, horrible, aggravating assaults that happen commonly with advertising and marketing, both in every previous platform, radio, outdoor, print, television commercials, et cetera. I think that there is the possibility, certainly in my view, that themes will get a little bit like Minority Report or Blade Runner, perhaps even on steroids. So I think that there is a combination of a revolution in data, as I mentioned, and also a revolution in technology. And people who have information overload now are going to have probably bigger problems going forward.
What would that look like? Paint a picture of the Minority Report, Blade Runner sort of marketing on steroids. In very practical terms, what kind of intervention, I'm not sure what the right word is, intrusiveness, ubiquity in our lives?
Well, the ubiquity part is, you know, right now it's still fairly expensive to buy an LCD or plasma screen. But just like rotary telephones have gone away, I think that all the sort of boxed cathode ray tube TVs, et cetera, will also go away. And digital signage will become so inexpensive, like a DVD player, that you'll wind up seeing indoor and outdoor versions of it everywhere, from being very small, like on your cell phone, to being really huge, like, as an example, the 23-story Reuters sign.
And will it be calling out to us, hectoring us by name, by predilection?
I think, just understanding where technology is going, the two big frontiers for us will be artificial intelligence that can, sort through and present things that are hopefully more meaningful than awful, and then also voice activation. I mean, voice activation is something that's been in the labs working perfectly well, and now it's in cars working a little bit better, but wait till it reaches the mass situation.
What is voice activation? What do you mean by that? How does that deliver us marketing?
Because you can ask for something and find it pretty quickly, not by using a mouse, by actually talking to your computer or to a sign for that matter.
Yeah, so I'm walking down the street and say, I feel like a XYZ, and the wall speaks back to me?
Yes. I think also there's QR codes, which are quick response codes that are being used by Docomo in Japan, where you point your cell phone at the equivalent of a barcode, and you shoot a picture of it with your camera, inside of your camera phone. And then it goes out to a server, and it can bring back to your camera phone anything it wants to. There's also the whole idea that your phone will also, have very high-resolution imagery. There's recently been a movie that was created just by using cell phones in South Africa as an example. So a lot of data and information and entertainment and peer-to-peer and all sorts of personalization and control and things like that will start changing.
So we're going to walk through the world and be spoken to, be addressed with some discrimination. Will we be able to turn that off?
Well, I think you possibly can. I mean, it touches on a lot of issues around your identity and just what's going to happen with that in the future. I'm not an expert on that, but I do believe that it is going to be a very different world moving forward because things are changing exponentially.
It's pretty mild so far. Here's a Purina ad. One of RGA's websites lets you watch other pets' owners and watch segments on cat care. Here's a vet welcoming you to the site.
I'm Dr. Stefan Rundquist, and this is At Home with Purina Cat Chow, a series of videos about cats and the people who share their lives with them. Welcome.
Matthew's calling from Worcester, Massachusetts. Hi, Matthew. You're on the air.
Hi.
What do you know?
Well, a couple of years ago, BMW came out with what I found to be a really interesting marketing campaign. They created a series of short films, all directed by famous directors, in which the star of the film was really the BMW.
But they were features. They were little bits of fiction. They were narrative, fun to watch.
Yeah, really fun to watch. And I remember when they came out and I was watching them just saying to myself, boy, this is a really fascinating form of marketing in that you want to watch it. You want to see what happens next. You want the next film to come out so you can go see it. I mean, it was really, really interesting, and it made you want to take part in it as opposed to wanting to change the channel.
Sounds like you're ready for the new day dawning, at least at that level. Matthew, thank you for your call. Bob Greenberg is with us from New York, and right now as well from Santa Barbara, California, we're joined by Phil Dusenberry. He's former chairman and chief creative officer of BBDO North America, the biggest of the big, or has been often. He started there as a copywriter in 1962. He coined GE's famous slogan, "We bring good things to life." He's author of Then We Set His Hair on Fire, Insights and Accidents from a Hall of Fame Career in Advertising. Phil Dusenberry, thanks very much for being with us.
Well, nice to be here, Tom. Thank you.
So Bob Greenberg is pointing to this big future that's ahead of us. He's got a Clio coming up, lifetime achievement, kind of the Oscar equivalent in the advertising world. You were sort of king of the mountain in that world for years when the 30-second spot was king. Do you see that going away? Do you agree that it's headed out?
Well, about 8 years ago, when I first learned that the broadcast advertising was dead, we were pronounced dead, revenues increased dramatically. About 4 years ago, when we were assured we were dead, they went up again. And this year, revenues are continuing to rise. So I think the demise of the 30-second television commercial is grossly exaggerated. Yes, it is true there have been this proliferation of other technologies and other avenues of communication, but I got to tell you, broadcast advertising is here to stay.
How do you see it interacting, or will it interact, with the interactive media, with the online stuff that's going to eventually be peppered and planted just about everywhere?
Well, you see, all of these technologies, including interactivity and all of these other forms of communication, are at this point in time support media for the biggest game in town, which is television and radio. These are not the primary thrusts of an advertiser's dollar. I mean, they're still a very minor portion of what advertisers are spending. And it's true they're spending more and more in these new technologies, but the fact of the matter is they're still playing a very minor role. So the real game in town here is still broadcast and radio and television advertising.
But we heard the Wall Street Journal reporter say at the top of the hour, network TV spending in 2005 flat, internet spending on the web up 30%. You know what happens when they're very different scales, but when the trend is like that, you know where that story ends, or does it?
Well, they're coming from a much lower base, so obviously the jump is going to be, you know, significantly higher. But the fact of the matter is, clients today are looking for every conceivable way that they can reach their consumer. And they're going to put their message on pizza boxes. They're going to put them in skywriting. They're going to do it every which way they can. And these are just new ways that clients are trying to, you know, spend their dollars. But it's all part of the same parcel. They're not going to go away and abandon broadcast advertising.
Bob Greenberg, is this old Madison Avenue not seeing the new dawn, or are these both going to live at the same time? Are we going to, for better or worse, have it all going on?
Well, I'd like to say hello to Phil. I've known Phil for many years.
Hi, Robert.
Hi there. We actually animated the identity for GE with Phil. We bring good things to life. We worked on dozens of ads in the past with BBDO. I think when you really look at what's happening, I think that the advertising industry, as was mentioned earlier, is stable, and what I mean by that is it's not growing. And what's happening with BBDO, because they're one of the best in the world, they're winning share from an area that I think is going to overall shrink. And I think that the traditional ad is certainly going to be part of, the future. But I think it will be, I think a big idea, as an example, for advertising and marketing is going to change. And I think it's sometimes going to include a television ad, and many times not.
But that eureka creative moment, it brings good things to life, and we've got the storyboards, and we're off to GE to sell it to Jack Welch, whoever it was at the time. Is that still going to be there, Phil Dusenberry, or is it all about how I can get close to the customer, educate them, bring them into my web of understanding the product?
Well, I think it's going to be there for one main reason, and that's really, I can put it into one word, and that's entertainment. When people want to be entertained, where do they go? They sit down in front of their television sets. I mean, they tune in the Super Bowl. They watch the Academy Awards. They look at the Grammys. I mean, that's where the entertainment is, and that's where a lot of advertising is still going to be, because that's where the consumer is. And one other thing, broadcast advertising is still very much an emotional-driven way of advertising, as opposed to things like the internet and other things that are just informational but really don't really have the emotional wallop that very often is required to convince a consumer to buy your product.
But what about that issue of the measurables? Again, Suzanne Vernitza with the Wall Street Journal saying at the top, advertisers are demanding that they can measure the results of their advertising. It's hard for a 30-second spot to do that, unless you're Pizza Hut and you can see Monday morning what the pizza sales were over the weekend. Isn't that hard for a 30-second spot to do?
Well, I guess it is, and of course, somebody like Pizza Hut, as you say, they get the report card every Monday morning, and other brands like beers and soft drinks, et cetera, it's a much more difficult measurement, of course. And I do believe that in the technologies that are available to advertisers today that there are other ways of measuring, you know, what they're getting for their dollar.
Let me take a call from Camden, South Carolina. Greg's calling. Hi, Greg. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'll just say that I have been in marketing the last 17 years and insurance products.
Mm-hmm.
The do not call list put us out of business. We have almost been able to rebound, but most we were trained, we were taught, and we were instructed to call individuals to set appointments to show our product.
So when the telemarketing blockade got put up, boom, you were up against it.
What we had to do was go out and start living off of renewals, and when you live off renewals, you're looking at 2 or 3% of the gross premium that you're collecting, which no one can live off of.
So where do you see the future, Greg? Do you see it in the big 30-second spot? Do you see it online? Where?
We have been able to come back and use the Internet to our good and to the consumer's good, because the Internet allows consumers to get quotes, get information sent to them, get someone to call, contact, or email them back with information about our products now, which otherwise we were just calling someone who may or may not be interested. So without the Internet, we would still be searching for a way to market that we would be allowed by law to do.
So it's working for you with the telemarketing barricade put up there. Bob Greenberg, is that going to be the way? I mean, direct marketing has been, continues to be huge. The Do Not Call list is a big development. Yet there's, you know, bulk spam boxes in the Internet side as well. Is the Internet a replacement for that?
Well, I think the Internet is certainly a way for individuals to get great information and compare pricing on a subject like insurance. And I think most of them also go to the web for, you know, high price investments in, like, automobiles. I think most people do their banking online, and they find out about products that they're interested in. The first place that they go to is the web. I mean, I think it's a natural extension of just getting the right information to be able to make a decision. And I do want to make one comment on what Phil mentioned earlier. I do want to say that it's a mistake if one thinks that you can't get emotional content through a website.
You can.
I think that the Nike brand is a good example of that. You're having a real emotional bond with the brand through content that's emotional that you're interacting with.
So we see it in the certainly in the photography here. I mean, it's compelling. These are compelling kids we're looking at. Phil Dusenberry, I know we just have you for another minute. What about this Yankelovich study that everybody cites that says Americans feel bombarded by ads, that they see ads as having little or no relevance to them? Is it possible that the old pitches don't work, that people get inured, that you have to find another way into the mind?
Well, let me say, here's the real problem, when you come right down to it.
Mm.
We are living in an attention economy. And what I mean by that is, 20 years ago, people watched television and listened to radio for X number of hours a day. Well, now, 20 years later, they still only devote that same amount of time to advertising, and yet they have this tremendous proliferation of messages coming at them.
Mm.
And yet they don't have any more time to devote to it. So I think what advertisers are up against is really finding a message that will cut through and cut across all of these various technologies and still create the brand imagery that clients are looking to create. But people don't have any more time to devote or spend on advertising than they did 20 years ago, and yet they have this smorgasbord of messages coming at them, and that's the real problem I think advertisers are up against. So many messages and so little time to absorb them.
There's the voice of experience from a lifetime of creating those messages and pumping them out, Phil Dusenberry, former chairman and chief creative officer at BBD&O North America, author of Then We Set His Hair on Fire. Phil, thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thank you, Tom. And Robert, great to talk to you, too.
Thank you.
Let's take a call. Clement's calling from Harwichport, Massachusetts. Hi, Clement. You're on the air.
Good morning. Good morning. My question is, assuming that the industry representatives agree with what I think is a problem in that many people watch a television ad, think it's terrific, creative, memorable, but don't remember the provider of the service or product. Do the new media that these gentlemen have in mind, are they likely to address that problem, assuming they agree it's a problem?
Bob Greenberg, do the hooks get in deep or deeper here, or is it still a matter of hooks and remembering when it's web-based, let's say?
I certainly think that it's a very different scenario when you're going to a website or clicking on a banner that takes you to a microsite, because you're choosing to do it, so you've already remembered a reason to do it. You may be captured by something of the moment when there's a banner or something that you click on. But once you get there, I don't think it's confusing at all in terms of remembering why you're there and what you're there for. I think it's a very different kind of relationship with the brand. I think that's why it's so much more effective.
But is it still about remembering? Is it trying to imprint brands on people's minds, or is it about, I don't know what you would call it, is it about a relationship, because the web can feel alive, responsive?
Well, I think it is about a relationship, and I think it's about a much deeper relationship. I think, again, when you're broadcasting commercials, you also have to take into consideration the four-screen metaphor that I was using before, whether it's cell phones, desktop, laptop computers, your television, or some other screens that may be around you, that you're just bombarded with a lot of things. I think most kids growing up now probably almost naturally have some type of ADD because of the huge amount of information and entertainment that's available to them. So just grabbing their attention in some way, or having them come to a place where information exists that they're interested in, I think it's a very different relationship. And it's much deeper, and it's much more a commitment to be involved with a brand that way.
And how personalized do you see all this getting? Does the mass marketing message go away? Do we all end up down in our very personal groove, being catered to our very narrow individual interests? Do we live in parallel but separate marketing universes 10 years out?
I think that personalization and customization is certainly something that is going to be of huge benefit to people as they get bombarded with so much information. They can design what they want to, again, interact with. I think that, again, I have to go back to the concept that just from a database scenario, the development of technology, the communications advances that we're having on a global basis throughout the world, I think that the younger audiences that are, finding it very natural to interact with information and technology, and the older audiences, quite frankly, who have more time on their hands, particularly retired people, that can spend a tremendous amount of time with a brand in a unique way.
Mm. New day dawning. We'll see what comes along with it and what gets left behind. Robert Greenberg, we feel you stretching into it. We're grateful to you for being with us this hour. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Robert Greenberg, Chairman, CEO, and Chief Creative Officer at RGA in New York. In May, he'll receive a Clio Award for Lifetime Achievement. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.